Oh, Jeff Merrick, there's nothing sadder, sir. There's nothing sadder than getaway day. Once your team
has been ousted from the playoffs.
Oh, yes. Oh, the Cubbies are bare. The players are packing their sticks away. They're looking at pictures of their cabin this summer where they're going to fish and smoke weed.
Okay. Let's go to Muskoka. Lake Joseph is waiting. Oh, Lake Joseph, Muskoka. Oh, I'm really curious
Excuse me, I have another lyric, please.
Perhaps
if the Blackhawks lose, all of them will go to Lake Taves. Lovely Lake Taves, lovely Lake Taves in Manitoba.
Oh, good. You got the province in that. I was really wondering about that. And if the Blackhawks lose, that's it for Joel Quenneville. Chicago's been looking for an excuse.
He will tie an anchor around his neck, and he will jump into Lake Taves. He will sink to the bottom, and his mustache will fray.
That is a great task. Great guest there, too. I kept hearing Greg Wyshynski. Nice singing, by the way, to open the podcast. I kept hearing all year long how much Alexander Ovechkin cares. How much Alexander Ovechkin cares, and he bleeds, and the tears, and he hates losing, and he's dedicated 100% to the Washington Capitals. So I'm really curious what Alexander Ovechkin had to say today, Greg.
Here is Alexander Ovechkin's incendiary comments from today, Wednesday, getaway day for the Washington Capitals.
Big day for the franchise. He's the captain. He's the leader. What? Huh? What? What do you mean?
Oh, crickets.
What do you mean?
Not there.
He had his media availability.
No. He commented, but it was the day before getaway day. But for getaway day eve. He spoke to the media on Tuesday so he could go to play in the World Championships. Now, in fairness, Coach Adam Oates was asked about why the captain of the team wasn't there on the day where they all get around the campfire and hear tales of the Boston Bruins. We'll get to that in a second. And Oates said that, listen, you have to understand that in Ovechkin's culture, in his homeland, the World Championships are a very big deal. Also, he is getting pressure because of Sochi. Got to be there for Sochi. Got to go make your appearance in the World Championships because of Sochi.
The NHL's going, are they? Or just Alexander Ovechkin?
Well, Alex Ovechkin is the official ambassador for Sochi.
Oh, so they're going to let him out of his contract even if the NHL isn't going?
I think he would just leave, probably.
Oh, okay. So then they'll
play. Yep.
So then Washington will probably suspend him, right?
Yeah, they would suspend him, I'm sure. Yeah.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, all right. They'd suspend him. They would do two things, nothing and like it. That's exactly what the Washington Capitals will do because he's the guy that steers the ship over there.
So here's the thing, right? So Oates said that he excused the Ovechkin leaving a day early and that if he had asked Ovechkin to stay for the rest of the media day stuff and the getaway day stuff on Wednesday, he would have stayed. Said it wasn't a big deal. So, you know, no stir in the pot there. Other Ovechkin stuff, so devastated after Game 7, sir, that he texted Adam Oates 20 times until 2 in the morning. That's how distraught he was.
Wow. What did he say?
I'm sure it was just a collection of parentheses and other punctuation, that Russian gibberish that he used on his Twitter feed.
Was it like his Twitter feed? Everything ends in ha-ha?
Yep.
We lost the game. Yes, ha-ha. Right. I play bad. Ha-ha. Stealing money. Ha-ha. Cheeky on Alexander.
So here's the takeaway from Media Day at the Caps practice facility today. First of all, it seems like for those of you who think that maybe there should be some imploding of this roster, who think that maybe there should be some wholesale changes, I don't think it's going to happen. The mode from this thing, the mood from this thing, the tone and tenor from this thing is that the same group that played in that 7-game series against the Rangers and won the final Southeast Division title will most likely return next year. Now, why, you're asking? Well, that's because there's a model. There's a model they're looking at, and it's not... Mm-hmm. You know, Kate Upton. It's a model like an example, Merrick. They look at the Boston Bruins and they say to themselves, here's a team that has been through lots of playoff adversity. The roster was kept together by management and they finally found a way to put it together. So, in theory, if you do the same thing with the Washington Capitals, they'll eventually kind of figure this thing out. Consistency works. Same coach, same players come back. Maybe a couple things change here or there, and you go forward and you win the cup. Now, this is just me speaking off the top of my head. There doesn't seem to be a Zdeno Chara in Washington, nor a Tim Thomas, nor a Patrice Bergeron.
Yeah. Is there a Lucic there? He was pretty important in that.
No, I don't think there's a Lucic there yet. No.
Is there even a Seidenberg there?
Well, I think our good friend Carl Alsner is a bit of a Seidenberg, wouldn't you say?
I think he's better than Seidenberg, actually. So, point to you on that one.
Thank you. So, the point is that I don't think we're going to see wholesale changes in Washington. It sounds like that they are going to move forward, same group, minus probably Mike Ribeiro, who still says he wants a 4 or 5 year deal. And I can't see the Capitals signing a guy through his 39th birthday.
Hang on one second. I'd like to amend something quickly. They don't have a Lucic yet, but they have the potential for one in Tom Wilson. I should say that. There's a potential for a Milan Lucic and Tom Wilson. So there is something on the horizon for Washington.
That's fair.
I know I'm being glib about the Caps. I think this is a bad – this is a poor
competition. They could have their Tyler Seguin if Kuznetsov jumps over next year, right?
Is he going to jump?
He's
a wild card.
If he doesn't jump next
year,
total
wild card.
Let's just write him off. Then he's never coming over. I mean, how do you not? I mean, it's been how long since he was drafted?
You know, it's funny you bring that up because Doug McLean today on Hockey Central brought up a really interesting point. How many Russians are left in the playoffs? Count them.
All right, you got Malkin.
Yep.
You got Gonchar. Got Datsuk.
Yep.
Got
L.A.
Let's see. Who else?
Defenseman.
L.A.
Scored a goal last night.
Oh.
Yep.
I call him Sergei.
Who, Voinov? There's four. That's it. There's four. There are four Russians left in the playoffs. And the point being.
That's it? No.
Four. I was thinking about it after. I was like, damn, where did all the Russian hockey players go?
Where are all the Russian role players is the question.
That's it. Like, where are the second, third line Russian players? Where's the 3-4 pairing D Russian hockey players? I guess you could say Voinov is, but where are the, you know, where are the, considering it's a country that produces, you know, a mass amount of hockey players, where are they? It's as if only the superstars come to the NHL and stay. There's no role players, no depth players. No Russian. They all stay in the KHL now.
Slavovoinov, by the way, is making a little case for the Conn Smythe, isn't he?
Dude's awesome. He's the reason Jack Johnson's not there.
Yeah.
If Vyacheslav Voinov isn't playing the way he was, you know, wasn't playing the way he was last year, Jack Johnson would still be a member of the Los Angeles Kings. Because the minute that guy stepped up, all of a sudden, all right, we can make a move here. All of a sudden, Jack Johnson's expendable.
But you're right, the lack of the Russian role player or lower line player.
Where
have you gone, Sergei Nemchinov, is what you're asking.
Precisely. Where have they gone? They stay in Russia.
Sergei Brelin.
For those types of players, there's more money to be made in Russia and stay in their homeland. It's only the guys who can come in and rock the large bank, the $6 or $7 million guys who come over and play here. By and large, I understand this is a wide brush I'm painting with here, but by and large, the Russian role player is gone. Out of the game. Out of the NHL, staying in the KHL. Great. Anyway, back to the Washington Capitals. What else did Adam Oates have to say?
Well, you know, I think, like I said, they have a model they're looking at. You know, a bunch of stuff about how Game 7 was disappointing, but, you know, that's a gigantic, devastating loss and, you know, all this stuff. Now, here's the thing about Oates that I thought was interesting. I asked a question both of Oates and of Carl Alsner, a friend of the show, Carl Alsner, about this theory I have about how you change and fix the capital situation. And my working theory is they don't have a killer instinct. They don't know how to win. And they're afraid of losing. And the way you can remedy that, I mean, the obvious, easiest way is to win, which is, you know, better said than done, but is to try to get people in that room that know how to win. They've done it before. They went out and got Arnott. They went out and got Brouwers on the roster of the ring, Knubel. Had a ring, you know. Back in the day, they when you know they made the Cup final, there was a Tikkanen, for example, guys like that. Mm-hmm. So they've done this before, and other teams do it before. But I just feel like you need to get guys that have won before in that room. The best example is this. If you're gonna put up the Boston Bruins as your billboard of here's what we're striving to be, where's your Mark Recchi on this team?
Yeah.
Where's that guy?
I'm trying to think back. Help me with this one, Wish, or anyone listening right now who's smarter than me. Would it have been the 1989 Calgary Flames who were the last team to win the Stanley Cup without having any players on the roster that had won the Stanley Cup before?
I think we've done.
Are they the last one?
Before. They might have been. Yeah, they might have been. But like that, I feel like they need an infusion. They need to. If this was 1994, they need all those Oilers like the Rangers had. Like they need that kind of thing to happen for this team. And I asked Alzner about it, and the answer was really sort of depressing. You know, he was open to the idea of injecting more rings into the room, but he said he wasn't sure how it would work out because he's never played with players like that before.
Oof.
Think about that. Yeah. And that's why, you know, you talk about the Edmonton Oilers, current Edmonton Oilers, Merrick, as being that team that sort of like doesn't know how to win because all they know is losing. Are the Capitals any different?
Culture.
The Capitals any different?
Well, yeah, they're better, for one. I mean,
they make the playoffs, but when it comes to being a postseason team, all they know is losing.
Yeah.
All they know is falling short.
Yeah, all they do know is falling short. You wonder if, too, not just do they need someone with a Stanley Cup ring, but don't they kind of need a player to come in and really just grab this team by the throat? I like Adam Oates' idea of consistency. We talked about it on the podcast yesterday. Alexander Ovechkin and this team have had too many coaches in a short time.
Yeah.
It's too many. You do need some stability in that organization. I agree with that 100%.
If it's Adam Oates,
it's great.
If you put a Chris Pronger on this team, right?
Oh, I know. That's a great example.
That's the kind of guy they need on this team, and especially on the blue line. I asked Oates about my theory about putting more rings in the room, and he called it a cliche. He said it's not really a big deal at all.
Except every other team has it that wins the Stanley Cup.
Well, yeah.
But other than that, it's a cliche. Yeah,
but dude, remember the source here. What doesn't he have?
A cup ring.
Now, that brings us to my single favorite part of today, which is
okay.
Adam Oates, unprovoked, by the way, bringing up Ray Bourque winning a cup with Colorado. I have the quote in front of me right here. It was within a larger conversation about losing Game 7s. Oates famously lost a Game 7. He talked about being on the plane, thinking about how those 2 months that you live and die every day with hockey go to waste because you lost in the last game of the season. You talked about how Vancouver went through the same thing. And here's this part about Ray Bourque. I played with Ray Bourque. Played for 21 years in Boston, goes to Colorado, they win a cup without Forsberg in the lineup. What is winning? Did that ring really matter to Ray when he won with a stacked team?
Now, I'm
of two minds of this. First off, this is a daily double for Mr. Wyshynski. Obviously, as a Devils fan, I loathe that team, that Colorado team that won. At the expense of the Devils dynasty, sir. Let's not forget. That would have been two in a row and then another one in 2003. That was a dynastic team that was derailed by the exit 16 Colorado team. So I already have one strike against Ray Bourque there. The other strike, obviously, is that he's a mercenary. And I will say this until the day I am under the dirt, sir. Ray Bourque is a mercenary who had to go to an all-star team to win a cup. Granted, he played a role on that team, and Sakic was nice enough to share the spotlight, but he still went to an all-star team to win a cup. And so Adam Oates' point is valid. What does ring really mean to Ray when he plays 21 years in one place, can't get the job done despite making the finals, and then goes to Colorado as a veteran mercenary and picks up a ring that Joe Sakic provided him? It was like Joe Sakic went to Jared or Zales and put a ring in a box and then presented it to Ray Bourque on their anniversary.
Okay, a couple of things. If the Pittsburgh Penguins win the Stanley Cup this year, will Adam Oates say the same thing about Jerome Iginla?
That's a great question. That is a great question, and I wonder what the answer would be. Now, Iggy's got to be younger than Bourque, though, when Bourque went to Colorado, yeah?
Yeah, totally. But look at Iggy, man. It's Dupuis, Malkin, and Iginla. All three players have at least a point in every single playoff game so far for the Pittsburgh Penguins.
Yeah.
Iginla's been great for the Pittsburgh Penguins. But isn't it interesting?
Morrow would be that guy, probably, right? You figure?
Yeah, that's a great example, too. Yep, that's one. Although I don't think he was begging to get out of Dallas, though, the way Ray was begging to get a cup. And actually, he almost went to Philadelphia.
Drove wasn't begging to get out of Calgary either. I mean, you know.
I think he wanted out, but he wanted it positioned in a way that he didn't look like the bad guy.
Oh, yeah, gee, you know, I don't ever want to, you know, make it look like I'm trying to, you know, subvert the team. I love the team. I love the fans. I love Calgary. So, you know,
just taking
a little trip over to Pittsburgh for a little bit. I don't know. I might come back to I'm not going to sell any condos or nothing like that. I love Calgary so much.
Here's an interesting thing, too. The more Boston Bruins players you talk to who have played with Ray Bourque, the more you realize they love taking shots at him. They really delight in going out of their way to take a shot at Ray. And you know why that is, Greg? The more guys that I talk to that played from that era, Ray Bourque was always the salary cap ceiling for the Boston Bruins. Harry Sinden made it quite known he wasn't paying anyone more than Raymond Bourque. He was going to be the top paid guy, and everybody fell underneath Ray Bourque. And the issue that a lot of guys, as I'm told, had with Ray was that he always came in light on his contracts. That was the deal between him and Harry Sinden. He always came in under market value for his services because it allowed Sinden to pay everybody else, whether it's Neely or Janney or Adam or whomever, Mo, Glemlin, all the guys, pay them less money. So a lot of guys feel that Ray Bourque cost them a lot of money while they played in the NHL because that was the arrangement that Ray Bourque had with Harry Sinden, perhaps figuring there's going to be an executive position for Ray Bourque at the end of his career, some type of position with the Boston Bruins at the end of his career. That, as I'm told, was the wink-wink between Camp Bourque and Camp Sinden. A lot of those players resent Ray Bourque even to this day. That's why when you say that he took that shot at Ray Bourque, it doesn't exactly surprise me.
It doesn't, but do you think that Do you think that Ray sees that ring differently? Almost like, and it kind of speaks to what's happening right now in the NHL, which is, if you're a player, would you see a ring differently if you won it in a 48-game season?
I don't think so. I really don't. With, you know, the way that, you know, I mean, how long has there been liberalized free agency, for crying out loud?
Yeah.
Right? I think you play as long as you can. You try to make as much money as you can. And if you win a Stanley Cup ring along the way, that's great. If you put yourself in a position to do so, then fantastic, you do it. And it's just that you won the ring, just that you got it.
And it wasn't like Bourque was playing 12 minutes a night. I mean, he was a cog in that machine, but make no mistake about it, that was a machine. Anyways, it was interesting to hear Oates bring that up. Oh, Oates also kind of also downplayed Recchi's role in that Boston team, too. I don't know. Adam Oates might not necessarily be in a lot of fan clubs of his peers, it seems like.
Jeez, really, eh?
Yeah, scorched earth. Nick Barney writes in from the UK, you made the Pronger-style player reference yesterday, move on. Oh, Nick, you listen to the show. I know it's a crazy thing to hear the same thing twice on consecutive days on this very radio program, but it did happen, yes.
At least I wait a couple of weeks to retell stories. Wish you just do it back to back.
I will fight that claim, sir. I guarantee you, if we look back through the annals of this show on iTunes, I can find consecutive days in which you told the same obscure junior hockey story from the 1950s.
Yeah.
And that's why they call the man Beef, you know, or some shit like that.
Oh, Bun Cook, yeah. Because his nose is like a dinner roll. Fred Cook, fun. Yeah. They haven't thought it was Bunny because he skated so fast. Not so fast. His wife said, I used to call him Bun because his nose was like a dinner roll. By the way, Nate Yule points this out on Twitter. This is interesting. Only 20 Russian skaters played 25 games or more this year.
Crazy, right?
Where have the Russians gone?
And Section 328 writes in, is the percentage of Russian players left in the playoffs much different than the percentage of Russians in the NHL?
Don't know.
That's a good question.
Great question. Don't know.
Don't know either. I'm assuming that we should probably find out at some point. All right, Tracy Myers of CSN Chicago coming up to preview the Hawks and the Wings tonight and that series. Also going postal coming up today as well. And with that, let's start the show proper, shall we?
Jeff Merrick of Sportsnet.
We're going to get corner offices out of this one for sure, Greg. Right away, your BS detector should go off. Why do I know this crap? What's wrong with me? Are you in
insane.
And Greg Wyshynski of Yahoo Sports.
You and I are not quite that dissimilar.
La 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 la, hockey, hockey, hockey.
Seattle is playing excellent defense these days.
What does that even mean?
Debate hockey.
So much junior hockey knowledge in that big juicy brain.
Oh, yeah.
Pop culture.
See, I kind of look at our podcast here like Jazz Odyssey.
There's some bloggers that are great, that are entertaining, that are factual. It's fabulous.
Damn right, JD.
And more hockey.
Just as we need to shoot off the side of the barn. That's how I developed my wrist shot, shooting frozen cow patties in Lloydminster.
Merrick versus Wyshynski.
Merrick versus Wyshynski, huh?
Huh?
All right.
Game one's last night, we had the... We kind of had two dominating performances by the Penguins and the Kings last night. Not exactly the start either the Senators or Sharks wanted, I don't think. Penguins defeat the Senators 4-1 in game one of the semifinals in the Eastern Conference. Vokoun, solid. Dupuis, obviously, you know, and all those cats still forging forward, scoring the points. Dupuis is sixth shorthanded. Malkin is third. Ginla now with eight assists in the playoffs. They rolled them last night, and they rolled them in a game in which Sidney Crosby did not score a point.
And was a minus one.
Yeah. So.
The thing that I've marveled at the last couple of seasons, and this season specifically, you know, I always looked at Pascal Dupuis and said, punching above his weight, that he doesn't belong, he's not really a first-line guy. He's like a classic, you know, third-line, mm-hmm. skilled, can move his feet, but more of a checking winger. Boy, was I ever wrong. This guy, from everything, from breakout to pass selection to shot selection to burning speed to that shot last night. That is the perfect shot. It's right over – well, it's a perfect shot. the way you stop that shot actually is if the goaltender stands up. But now with everyone going down in butterfly, it's now called the perfect shot. It's in that spot right above the shoulder between the mask and the glove. It's a perfect shot. And did you think for 1 second that two-on-one that Cook's going to get that pass from Dupuis? Did you think for 1 second that 24 is going to get the pass? Not a chance.
Not at all.
Not a chance.
The Kings beat the Sharks in an entertaining game last night. Mike Richards makes two plays, sets up the Voinov goal nicely with a little bit of a pick action near the blue line, then deflects.
Yeah.
A little bit of a pick, and then okay. deflects home the Voinov shot for the second goal in the second period. But the story in this game is the fact that Jonathan Quick is looking very much like the Jonathan Quick who hoisted the Conn Smythe last year. I mean, he was impenetrable last night, and it won like the Sharks weren't trying. 16 shots in the third period for the San Jose Sharks in that game, and Quick went. Quick was swallowing up rebounds. He was everywhere, and there wasn't a single chance for the Sharks last night where you're like, wow, Quick was really fortunate to stop that one. He was in complete control.
He was. He made 35 saves last night, much like Thomas Vokoun, who also made 35 saves last night for the Pittsburgh Penguins. After game two, and those the first two games against St. Louis, we had the classic flubs, like really bad plays. There was the 90-footer from Barrett Jackman. There was a play behind the net with led to the Alexander Steen over. Like all the two really bad brain cramp plays. It was after that that he just drilled down and said, okay, that's it. No more bad goals. That's it. I'm done with the bad goals. It's almost as if, and I love this about players, and we saw this with the Oilers team in the 80s, when they made a mistake, it got them angry at themselves. And I think that's what you're seeing with Jonathan Quick, a player who's angry at himself.
And like you don't want to see him angry.
Like, no, he's Incredible Hulk, Bill Bixby. The Oilers squad.
Old school. The Oilers, Mark Ruffalo, how about that?
Thanks. No, I'm a 70s kid. Come on, you know that by now. Hey, by the way, about the Incredible Hulk, how come his pants never came off? I always wondered about that. If he's getting like ginormous, his shirt's tearing off, how come the pants stayed?
They've got to be Lululemon. They've got to be yoga pants of some sort. I mean, they have to be, right?
They had Lululemon back then, too?
Yeah, Lululemon, sorry. It's got to be that, right?
Really, eh?
They're purple
okay,
ones.
I had no idea. Pretty
they are purple. Hulk. They look like they could be right out of a step class.
Hulk was pretty hip then. I had no idea he was rocking the yoga pants back in the day. Okay, so a digression there. Yeah, Quick's playing inspired. He's an angry goaltender at himself right now. It was the Daryl Sutter Bowl yesterday, the LA Kings against his old team, the San Jose Sharks. You want to mention the Rafi Torres hit as well? There's a hearing at some point as well for the Rafi Torres hit on Jared Stoll, which makes me do this. Let me see if you can hear this on the microphone. This is me hitting my head. Can you hear that?
I thought you were fapping because Rafi Torres laid out some other guy. Again.
Nah, if Dave Clarkson or Ryan O'Reilly were in the playoffs, it might be fap. And that was
we'll get to Torres after we talk to Tracy Myers, by the way. But speaking of Clarkson, spoke to a fellow reporter today who was convinced that David Clarkson will not be a member of the Toronto Maple Leafs next year, nor a member of the New Jersey Devils. He expects perhaps he will be yet another power forward on the Philadelphia Flyers.
Really, eh?
Mm-hmm. What do you think about that?
I could see Boston making a move.
I think they'll
probably walk away from Horton.
I could see me weeping like a child if Dave Clarkson goes to the Philadelphia Flyers and then becomes, they're the next Keith Primo. Joining us now on the line, a reporter who has no equal, a favorite person on the program. She is Tracy Myers of CSN Chicago, and she joins us now to talk about Victor Stahlberg. Hello, Tracy. How are you?
Gentlemen, I am great. How are you today?
We're good, Tracy, but we're confused. Okay, so it's not a performance issue. It's not an off-ice issue. We don't know what the issue is, but we'll ask you anyway. What's the issue with Stahlberg? How come he's not playing? What gives?
What I was told was that he was not happy that he was not on the power play in the first round. He was on it all regular season. Was not on it on the first round against Minnesota, and apparently vocalized that to the coaches. Now, I had heard there might have been something off ice. Coach Joe Quenneville said today that it was not. It just seems weird that it would come down to just that. I still think there might have been something else to this. I can't confirm it, that it was anything off ice, but it just seems strange that, if a guy complains about not being on the power play, that ends with this, with him, being taken out of game one. But, Coach, has made his decision, and the other thing is if he was complaining about the power play, I got to be honest, I don't think he had that great of a regular season on it. Came away with two assists. He really wasn't that noticeable of a net front presence, so it probably wasn't the best thing to complain about, as far as I'm concerned.
Do you think it's anti-Semitism? I assume Stahlberg's a Jew.
I'm gonna give a big guess. No.
All right. So, what are your thoughts about this series? So, here's my take on it. I got Chicago in six. I do think that Detroit played in Game 7 against the Anaheim Ducks the kind of game that they can still play. Just shut it down. Yeah. You never get any time in the offensive zone. Datsyuk and Zetterberg make the difference kind of hockey. If they do that four times, they can win this series, but I just don't see their defense playing above its head for a second straight series as it did against Anaheim. I think Chicago's got too much up front.
And I agree with you. I mean, there's no doubt the one thing about the Blackhawks is that they never take Detroit too lightly, ever. I don't care if it's a regular season matchup. I don't care if it's preseason, whatever it is. They know what they get with Detroit. They all watch that matchup, those last couple games against Anaheim, and they know the heart of this team. They know the momentum that they got off of that. But I agree with you. I mean, of all the things that the Blackhawks have over other teams, depth has got to be right up there. I mean, it's just tremendous. Through the forward lines, through defense, you can tell with the minutes, and I've probably talked to you guys about this already. You look at just a guy like Duncan Keith's minutes, where he played three less minutes per game this year than he did last year. I mean, that's astounding. So that just shows the trust that they have among those defensive pairings, and it shows that they've got tremendous depth, and that goes through forward lines, too.
Yeah, I love this matchup for a couple of reasons. One, the camera shots we're going to get behind the bench of the two gentlemen in Babcock and Quenneville who have the best death stares of anyone in the entire NHL. This is going to be fantastic. But two, from Joel Quenneville's point of view, against the Red Wings in his career, 6-20. What's Quenneville said about the Detroit Red Wings, Tracy?
Well, he said beware. His overall record I know is not so good, and you could look at what the Blackhawks did in the regular season. It'd be so easy to say, oh, well, look at this, but playoffs being the different beast that they are, it is what it is. But nobody on this Blackhawks roster is taking this team lightly. Coach Joe Quenneville certainly isn't either. Nobody scoreboard and videotape watches like that guy. So, they know they're going to have their hands full. Even three of the four games this year, you take away that 7-1 game that they had, and I think that was the one where Henrik Zetterberg was a late scratch. All one goal games, all tight games. One of them was overtime, one was a shootout. So, it is what it is. It's just going to be tremendous hockey. It always is between these two. I'm actually going to be very sad that they're not in the Western Conference together anymore after this.
Yeah, they'll have to wait for a Stanley Cup final. Okay, a quick little follow-up on that as well. You know, curious as well, you know, with these two teams you mentioned, the last time they'll meet up in the playoffs as conference rivals. And every team has its kryptonite team. It's almost like a psychological barrier. And even when Chicago won the Stanley Cup in 2010, Tracy, as you well know, they didn't face off against the Detroit Red Wings. And in a lot of ways, this is still a hurdle psychologically for the Blackhawks. Are they talking about it that way, that this is still a something-to-prove series for them?
Yeah, they are. In fact, Jonathan Toews brought that up a couple days ago because, you know, in the year before, the 2008-2009, that road was heading through Detroit, and that's where they got stopped. I think it was the Western Conference Finals. They lost it at Series 4-1 to the Red Wings, and Red Wings went back to the Cup. So there's no doubt, and Toews said that. We absolutely have something to prove. You know, you look at what they did in the regular season, but at this time of year, it means nothing. You know, all the great teams, if you're going to jump that hurdle, you're going to have to do it through Detroit. I actually used to remember we had this talk about the Dallas Stars back in the early 2000s, you know, when I started helping cover them. Same thing with them. You know, they went to two straight finals, but neither one of those roads went through Detroit. It's a tough road to take, and absolutely the Blackhawks have something to prove there.
You've seen him throughout these playoffs. How good has Corey Crawford been? His numbers are incredible, but how good has he been for those five games?
That's Canada's Olympic goaltender, by the way, Tracy, at this point.
Yes. He's, you know what, he had the most to prove from the regular season, and he had the most to prove in the playoffs because everybody with him just remembered that series against Phoenix last year, and he was solid through it, but they remember those two soft goals, and that's what, unfortunately, he had to hang his hat on entering this year. And so, you know, it was ironic that the first goal he gave up in the series was actually kind of a softie against, I think it was Kyle Clutterbuck who scored that. But after that, he shut it down. And I think that's the biggest difference with Crawford this year is you look at if he has given something bad up, he's recovered. And he's come right back immediately and said, okay, you know, I gave that up. I'm not happy that I gave it up, but from here on out, I've got this covered. And he has.
Tracy, what did you steal?
I know. Yeah, they found me. See, you know, this is the only problem about coming outside is that this is always when something seems to be going on in this city.
Tracy, a little bit about Patrick Kane as well. All eyes on number 88. Boy, that pass to Sharp in game two was gorgeous. The pass of the year as far as I'm concerned. But are you surprised at all that he's turned himself, you know, more into the Patrick Kane, the playmaker, than Patrick Kane, the finisher?
And, you know, we were talking about that. I think he's got one goal since the Cup final. I think that's the breakdown. But, you know, maybe that's a part of him playing a little bit of center last year was, you know, the I don't want to call it unselfish because I don't think I ever call him a selfish player. But he's almost more dazzling on the passes now than he is with the goals. And so, he said it the other day. He said, listen, you go for the best option that's out there for you. If it's a pass, you make the pass. If you can drive and score the goal, then you do that. And he admits, he said there's probably a few chances there that he had in that first round. It just didn't go his way. But, you know, I don't think he's going to be silent for too much longer. But, yeah, those passes have made a couple highlight reels, and for good reason.
You know, I don't want to say you're an ingrained part of this podcast now, Tracy, but you're getting questions from the readers.
I'd be honored if you did, actually. That'd be great.
You're getting questions from the readers.
You have cult status now.
Pete David writes in, can you ask Tracy why no one is asking Quenneville to clarify his logic for benching perhaps the fastest player in the league against a defense that lacks mobility and whose greatest susceptibility is speed to the outside in favor of a player who brings literally nothing useful to the table than Carcillo?
Well, I mean, that's what we've been trying to do these last couple games. You know, I asked, you know, about this. We've asked about the speed factor. We've asked about, you know, what he has to do to get back in. You know, has it been an off-ice problem? Isn't it? And basically, the most he will say is coach's decision, you know. Mm. And this all started a couple days ago when he was missed his first practice, and or I shouldn't say missed it. He was, you know, on that proverbial fifth line or whatever you want to call it. And Brandon Saad was too. And Brandon Saad was saying all the right things right afterwards, saying, listen, I get it. You know, I didn't play as well as I should have in the first round. And then the next practice, he was back among the top. Stolberg has not obviously been too happy about this. He's answered questions yesterday very curtly on the matter. But yeah, all questions that we have lobbed at Quenneville have been deflected very succinctly as far as this. And asking him to elaborate, he has not been really willing to do so.
In your opinion, yes or no, did Chicago sleepwalk their way through the Minnesota Wild? Personally, I think so, but you're closer to it than I am.
Yeah, I think so. And I don't think it was an intentional thing. And I think it was, it almost kind of goes with what I think about this series, is that they're going to be up for this series just given the nature of the rivalry, the nature that it's the Red Wings and longstanding and we hate each other and all this. And I just think it was a combination of, okay, you know, they just didn't get the wheels going the way they usually do. And, you know, it's not that same rivalry with the Minnesota Wild. And the Wild play a different game. You know, it's not the Blackhawks style of game, which them and the Red Wings play almost the same exact type of game. So, no, I agree with you. We did not see the typical Blackhawks that first round.
Last one for me. I don't know. Have you released your ballot as a PWH, Professional Hockey Writers Association voter?
I have not released it. I mean, I guess I certainly could, but I rarely talk about who I vote for. But
well, that ain't the question. The question is whether or not you you believe Jonathan Toews should win the Selke this year.
I think so, but I'm biased. You know, I also thought he should have been among the finalists for the Hart Trophy. So that, you know, that tells you that. I mean, I watch this guy every game, and you know, it's just phenomenal the game he plays, and especially defensively, because when you're a top guy, it'd be so easy to just kind of let the defense go, and he doesn't. I think he was plus 28 this year, so absolutely, I would. I think he should win it.
And finally, from me, your thoughts on Brandon Saad? You know, first, you know, significant, you know, time playing up on the first line this season, of course, with Jonathan Toews. Your thoughts on how he's handled the season and how he's handling the playoffs?
I thought he handled the season remarkably well. I mean, this is a kid who was thrown into a you know, a crazy situation, got that chance because you know, Carcillo got hurt first game out, and then all of a sudden you got Brandon Saad, 20-year-old Brandon Saad. Hey, kid, play the top line. And I thought he did well at it. You know, I think we get caught too much in this whole, well, put anybody with Jonathan Toews and Marian Hossa and they play well. Well, that's not the case. We've seen that with other players over the past few years, that they haven't lasted long with some of those top line guys. But Saad carved out his own niche. I mean, he was just tremendous and gritty and would go into those hard puck areas and drove the net. He just, as Toews constantly said, he was fearless. You know, and as far as the playoffs, I think the effort is certainly there. You know, there might be a little deer in the headlights thing for him because obviously this is a big stage and he was in it a little bit last year, but not much. But there's no doubt that the effort is there, and I think he gets a little more comfortable as this goes.
Excellent.
Tracy Myers, we love you. CSN Chicago, you're the best.
Thank you, guys. Good to talk with you as always.
We'll chat soon, my friend, both here and on Twitter.
Sounds great.
Thanks, Trace.
Thank you.
Trace Myers, Chicago Blackhawks, Detroit Red Wings, the only game on the board. Was it weird last night, Wish, watching hockey? I tweeted it out when it finally hit me. Where did all the games go?
Hockey games gone? I'm in a real singing mood today. I don't know what that is.
I know you're a little jumping your step.
I'll tell you exactly what it is. So I'm driving back from Kettler, where the Caps practice, and once in a while you're listening to the radio. I have XM, and a song comes on that you're not expecting, and it just hits you, and you just it now all of a sudden your life is music. There's a song by a band called New Politics called Harlem, which is ridiculously good song, and so that came on today, and I was just, if you had seen me on the dullest toll road, you would think I was the fanciest boy in all the land with all of my moves, dancing and singing, head shakes, all of it.
Okay, you know which one's doing that for me these days is the new Daft Punk song, Get Lucky.
Oh, with, God, yeah, Pharrell with Pharrell from
yeah,
NERD.
Man.
Totally.
Yeah, yep. That one to me is like, that will be the anthem of the summer. Don't you think?
My girlfriend and I have been debating whether or not that song or a song called Blurred Lines by Robin Thicke is the song, the jam of the summer. The Robin Thicke song, also featuring Pharrell, is really good. And the video on YouTube, if you are so bold, it's called Blurred Lines. The video on YouTube is Robin Thicke cavorting with naked models. I immediately put that ahead of Sledgehammer as the most impressive video I've ever seen.
So here it is, man. I'm just playing Daft Punk now. Like, I just can't help but feel good when I have this on.
Yeah, it's crazy good. It's a great song. I was listening to the new Daft Punk album online yesterday, and I just can't wait. I'm a huge fan. It's great.
Daft Punk's sweet.
It's really, really
good.
To turn it back to
hockey for a second here. Uh-huh. We'll get on about Robin Thicke and Daft Punk in a second.
Oh, if I may, okay. One thing on my singing. Mike Bradley writes in, your singing sounds like coked butt Mark Wahlberg from Boogie Nights, Dirk Diggler. So I sound like I'm singing You Got the Touch.
Because Greg and I do a couple lines before the podcast.
That's
how Greg and I get warmed up. Yeah. You got some on your nose there still, bud. You want to wipe that off with the cameras coming.
Oh, sorry about that.
Yeah. Okay, so here's a question for you. I'm going to name you six hockey players, but I'm going to group them in threes. Tell me which collection of three are the better hockey players.
Okay.
Alexander Ovechkin.
Uh-huh.
Sidney Crosby. John Tavares.
So those are that's one group. That's group A.
That's one group. Yeah.
Okay.
I'm going to give you another three.
Okay.
Patrice Bergeron, Pavel Datsyuk, and Jonathan Toews. Which is the better three?
Now we're going five tools, right? We're going total hockey player kind of thing.
Uh-huh. You got it, buddy.
I would have to go with group B.
Isn't that interesting? Like, group B is nominated for the Selke. Group A is nominated for the Hart.
But that's more because I don't think that Ovechkin and Tavares are as complete as the three players over in that other group. Yeah.
Agreed. Totally. But that is a point made by a buddy of mine that goes by @67sound on Twitter. He said that there's a case to be made that the Selke Trophy candidates that were named today are better players than the Hart Trophy finalists. And you know what? Damn it. He's right. As far as complete hockey players go.
You know, it's funny. We talked about Josh Harding being a slam dunk for the Masters yesterday. I cannot see a situation in which Patrice Bergeron does not win the Selke. Can you?
Well, first of all, I'd like to point out some pretty hardcore West Coast bias in this Selke Trophy. Do the professional hockey writers even watch the Eastern Conference?
First of all, it's even not West Coast bias. It's like Midwest bias. If it was West Coast bias, they would have put Kopitar in there, and that's where the LA fans are all losing their shit right now because Kopitar got robbed.
Here we go. I'm going to have another George Norrie moment. Nothing west of the Mississippi as far as these nominations go.
Andre from Los Angeles, you're next.
Because, I mean, you could have thrown Kopitar into that mix, right? I mean, for those of you that are in love with Theo Corsi numbers, you could have thrown Kopitar in that mix, and you could have probably even thrown Franz Nielsen into that conversation, I think.
Well, what position does Franz Nielsen play?
I know.
You are never going to get a winger in the Selke finals. I mean, like, Marian Hossa probably deserved some recognition, too. The Selke thing is interesting from a philosophical standpoint for one reason for me, which is that you can look at this award and say that you have to be a complete player, or you can look at this award and say you have to be a really great defensive forward. I think it's morphed into a complete player, like the best offense is a good defense sometimes.
That's what it's become.
Yeah, and so when you look at guys like Toews and Bergeron and Datsyuk, they're guys that will hurt you offensively and also, you know, steal the puck, win a faceoff. But there's an entire subcategory of guys that probably in a perfect world should be Selke nominees or get consideration but never do. And I'm talking about Jay McClement is one, Boyd Gordon is one. This class of guy, a defensive specialist, in McClement's case, a vital player to the Leafs' PK,
totally,
are never going to get any recognition for the Selke. It's always going to go to the best two-way player. And you know what? I'm fine with that. Like, I'm not going to penalize.
Honestly, I think we really need to start changing the definition of these trophies because they're defined one way but then voted on another way. Let's either change the definition or change the way of voting.
The other award that's in this genre is the Norris, and I think in the Selke's case, they really do specify defense. Like
best
the goal
defensive forward.
Even, yeah,
but,
the goal
but it's not
matter.
Voted that way. But it's not
well,
voted that way.
Well,
it's
but
not.
Here's how. But Merrick, but here's how it's voted because I know my professional hockey writer brethren and sisterthren, as Tracy Myers is. It's voted on who has the best faceoff percentage and who has the most takeaways.
Most takeaways, yeah.
I, but for this award,
Mary,
I go
also.
Go ahead.
Also, married to high offense, relatively high offensive production as well.
Yeah.
That does come into it.
Yeah.
Or else, you know who would have won it last year in Colorado.
Yeah, that's right. When I do the Selke, when I vote for the Selke, I do spend copious amounts of time behind the net and really look into the numbers to see quality of competition, to see the Corsi stuff, the zone start stuff I think is vital. All of this stuff I factor into my decision on the Selke, because I think the Selke is the one award where you can get real stat nerd with it and prove your case. And in the case of Bergeron, I think the case is airtight. Especially, goddamn, he gave up like 13 goals 5-on-5. That's insane. No, that's crazy good.
Yeah, and this was a trophy, let's not forget, too, that was given to Bob Gainey. You know why? Because they had to give him something. Because he was a player that everybody was raving about for the Montreal Canadiens, but didn't have it was a bizarre phenomenon in the NHL at that time. It was a trophy given to him because they didn't have something for that type of player. Right? Yeah. And you have like Viktor Tikhonov saying, that's the greatest hockey player I've ever seen. And I was like, well, what is he? What does Bob Gainey do? And we realized there is this role in the NHL for this type of player, and we need to give it, you know, we need to have a trophy for this guy. And they just created it. They essentially should have called it the Bob Gainey Award, because they gave it to him for 4 years until Steve Kasper broke the streak. But it was a very, did you find it like a really bizarre award?
It is. It is. I mean, it makes
last,
sense.
Who is the last winger? Hang on, I'm going to look this up. Who is the last
By the way, Michael Perino writes in, for the Selke, how come no love for Derek Stepan? Plus minus 25, 44 points. Good two-way player for sure, but I mean, if you were going to give the Selke to anybody on the Rangers, would it be Callahan?
Yes.
Yeah.
Ryan Callahan for sure. And here's the interesting part of it too about Bob Gainey and how this trophy is voted on now, because I'm just looking at it. There's only been a handful of wingers that have won it. Yuri Lehtinen was the last one in 2003, and he won it three times. Dirk Graham won it with the Hawks. He was a right winger. Craig Gramsci with the Sabres. He was on the left side. Bob Gainey, folks, wasn't a center. He was a left winger.
Whoa.
Like, the trophy was given to a winger. And then now all of a sudden, by way of voting, you have to be a centerman to win this trophy. Why? Why?
Well, because it's a lazy vote. And they look at faceoff percentage and they say, wow. Listen, I'm just happy this isn't another plus minus award like the Norris can be some years. You know what I mean? Like at least faceoff percentage is something tangible and important versus, you're 50 feet down the ice while a guy scores a goal.
Says nothing about, I know, but I don't necessarily know that faceoff percentage has to be a top stat for this award.
No, but
I really don't.
Look at
face-off stats. Like winger, this just in. Unless you're the second guy in, wingers ain't taking face-offs, bro. Ain't happening.
No, but
I don't like the way this is voted on. I don't like the way this is coming out.
I think face-offs are important, but you have to go inside the numbers. I'd love to see. I would love if NHL.com could break down face-off percentage in the defensive zone, for example. Right.
I'm surprised
draws.
That the NHL doesn't do two things. One, let me put it this way. I'm surprised the NHL hasn't blatantly ripped off two websites. One you mentioned, that's Gabe Desjardins Behind the Net. They have all that information at their fingertips, at their disposal. People that want that type of information. People care about Fenwick. People care about Corsi. They care about that kind of stuff. Why the NHL hasn't ripped that off is a subsection of their own NHL.com. And the other one is CapGeek.
Yeah, no
I'm
kidding,
still
right?
shaking my head why the NHL hasn't done their version of CapGeek or just hired Matthew Wiest.
I wonder if – do you think Matt has to pay a licensing fee for that information?
That is an amazing question.
You know, because in fantasy hockey, you have to license the players' names and likenesses and stuff. I wonder if salary information is proprietary for the NHL.
Ooh. I don't know. That's a good question.
Let's send him an email and see what's up. I haven't talked to Matt in a while anyway. Phil Coker writes in, based on the sole NBC broadcast angle, to me, the Rafi Torres hit on Jarrett Stahl looks like a case of a guy's history and reputation making a otherwise clean and hard hit look worse than it actually was. I'm not even sold on the idea that he made contact with his head as the PPOC, which tends to be the kicker for incidents like this.
So what was that last point? The PPOC was the shoulder or the
not
head?
Not the head. Not the head.
I that's how I saw it. It was shoulder going into the head. Shoulder to shoulder bleeding into the head.
Well, You know, I put up the video last night of Puck Daddy for the explicit reason that it was a controversial hit that took a guy out. Not every time we put up a video does it mean I think a guy is guilty. And I don't know if he's guilty. I've looked at both angles. The straight ahead angle that you saw a lot, and then there's a reverse angle that you could watch on YouTube. And in both cases, the reverse angle makes this look a little bit like Thornton Perron, glancing blow with the back kind of thing, back yeah. shoulder. It's a very, if there's contact with the head, it's in a very sort of like Torres skating by and Stoll's head is down kind of thing. But Torres is having a hearing, and your take, though, Merrick, is that he's having a hearing because he's Rafi Torres.
Because he's Rafi Torres, and he came off that humongous suspension last year against Marion Hossa and the Chicago Blackhawks. To me, this is all about the nameplate. This is going to be, if it is, going to be a name. It's going to be a nameplate suspension. I didn't see it as suspendable. Oh, quick, as an aside, people have hit us up on Twitter. Yes, Franz Nielsen is a center. I should point out for the New York Islanders. But secondly, I do think this will be a reputation penalty if he gets one. I'd like to think that this is just a call Rafi in, sit him down, say that hit was borderline. Remember our conversation at the end of the playoffs last year. Let's not let this happen again. I hope that's what's going to happen. Because I really don't want that to be a suspension. Do you wish?
No.
Like if, I know the NHL is terrified of the NFL lawsuit. I get that. And they want to make it at least appear as if
it's,
they're trying
you know,
to
it's,
police
I,
and clean
I
up
say
the game.
No, but
I just
could,
don't
I
want
say
that
no,
to be a suspension.
I say no, but it could be a game. I mean, if principal point of contact
how
is the
can
head.
It be, how can it be a game considering his history? How?
Well, that's the thing. I mean, it can't be. I guess it can't be a game because of his history. But
no.
But you know what I'm saying? Like
if you throw
the
a 20,
hit
you
is
throw a,
principal
you,
point of contact a, is the head, you got to suspend him.
And you have to suspend him large too because he's coming off a 20 gamer. Well, it was like originally 25 games. It got reduced.
But it's I said no to you because it's one of those hits that I hate because it's like clearly Stoll is in a prone position and that's not Torres' fault, right?
Yeah.
He's kind of
he's
like
reaching for a puck, reaching
for
a puck bending
yeah,
over,
exactly.
Going out of his zone.
You kind of hate that. You kind of hate that. Sorry for the brain fart on Nielsen, by the way.
Whatever.
Just based on the fact he was a center.
There's
I know he's
NHL.
Not. I know he's not one of the Sedins. I mean, that's a start as far as mistakes that I make.
Dude, there's anyways. 700 players in the NHL. It's okay, bud. I make mistakes all the time. It's okay. We all do.
At least
okay,
he's not
bud.
Retired.
I still love you.
Yeah.
Oh, I still love you, bud. It's okay.
All right, with that, I think it's probably time for a Wednesday favorite. No,
you
want
to do a
right?
mailbag segment every
oh,
week?
Oh, yeah.
It's time to look deep into the souls of Jeff Merrick and Greg Wyshynski. Whoa, not that deep.
We are nutting up for each other here.
Now's your chance to ask Merrick and Wyshynski anything, and we mean anything.
You got your thinking, Took?
Vegan cooking tips. Favorite Doctor Who characters. What's the best bar in Stouffville? Is there a bar in Stouffville? The meaning of life. Wait, let's not get carried away with that.
We answer your mail.
PuckDaddyBlog at Yahoo.com. On Twitter at Jeff Merrick and at Wyshynski. We're going postal on Merrick versus Wyshynski.
This is from Larry McCurtis. Assign each other correlating Simpsons characters. I see Merrick as kind of a Professor Frink Troy McClure hybrid. Wish is a bit Homerish, not on the Jack Edwards sense, and a bit Burns-ish, not the adult Hansen brother who plays for the Sharks and grins like the freshly arrived foreign cousin. I guess wow. Josh is Arnie Pie. Josh is definitely Arnie Pie in the sky.
Josh,
Arnie Pie,
yeah.
Merrick, the Professor Frink thing, you're saying that because that's the voice that I use when we talk about Merrick's Illuminati Society of Hockey Nerdism. But as far as me, if I had to assign Merrick a Simpsons character, Troy McClure is very good. I think that might be the best.
Troy McClure?
It'd be if we could somehow combine Troy McClure and comic book guy.
What about Kent Brockman?
Kent Brockman? I can get a little divish, guys. You've seen me get divish. For sure. I've had that before.
Divish,
I usually catch myself in it too, but
dare,
I get there.
Dare I say, Josh, that Merrick does not have the gravitas of a Kent Brockman? Dare I say that?
It's true.
It's Scott true, Morrison is a Kent Brockman.
I fake it in my intros. Yeah. Yeah, because I come off still as if, you know, I'm still young broadcaster.
Oh, listen,
it's true.
What are we doing? Come on, we know who Kent Brockman is. Darren Millard.
Kent Brockman, he does a really good straight delivery.
Yep.
Yeah, but he laughs more than Brockman. Like he
he's a joker. Yeah, I mean, he could be a little high maintenance.
No, that'd be me.
That'd be me. Who do you think I am? Can you assign a Simpsons character to me?
I think you have a little... Well, first of all, there's a lot of Krusty in there. There's a lot of Krusty the Clown.
I was just thinking
that.
No one goes for the laugh.
I always goes for the laugh, a hard-drinking, depressed clown. No, I don't think that anyone
will you drink,
assign
sir?
That to me.
Compulsive gambler.
Yeah, that's right. Do you miss your father, Krusty? I think about him all the time, except when I'm at the track. And where did you spend a lot of your youth with your father, Greg Krasinski? You're Krusty.
So does that make? Okay, let me think this out for a second. I wanted to say Leahy is Sideshow Bob, but in theory, Justin Bourne should be Sideshow Bob because he left Puck Daddy to start his own thing. Right.
That's right. He'd be Sideshow Bob.
So Leahy would be Sideshow Mel. No, Leahy would be the monkey, and then Harrison would be Sideshow Mel. Is that how it works?
I suppose. It would be more interesting if hit us up on Twitter to assign Simpsons characters to us.
There you go. Good question, though, Larry.
You have to admit, you do have a lot of Krusty the Clown in you.
Oh, God, dude. I'm never going to deny that. I'm basically a Catskills hack with clown makeup on. I'm more than willing to raise my hand on that.
You're like my young little Don Rickles. That's who you are.
Every day. We got to talk about the NHL again.
Torres hearing again. It's a living.
Hey, Josh, this cannon's not going to light itself.
Sean Peace writes in, Greg, if you and Jeff grew playoff beards, which player's beard would most like be, would most, would, oh, okay. Which player's beard would like most, would be, which guy in the
Jesus.
League would you look like with your beard?
There you go. Wow.
He wrote it all. He's got the word like in there seven times. Random Penguin Rob Scuderi. Playoff beard would look like Sid's. It would look scraggly and disconnected, except I would have, like, here's the thing, right? Like, I've got a fat gene in my family, and I've been able to kind of keep it at bay. It's like it's like when the Hulk is inside of you. You don't want to get angry and let the fat neck out. I do have kind of a turkey gobbler thing going on occasionally, and I think that if I grew a full beard, it would be neck beard time, and it'd be kind of gross. So I my beard itself, as far as coverage, looks like Sidney Crosby. As far as like what it would look like, it would look like a waterfall of hair down a fat neck is probably how it would look.
I would like to say Brent Burns because I think I'm headed there one day with my life here out in the country when I completely unplug and go off the grid and you never hear or see from me again. I'll be that guy. But the thing is, when I grow facial hair. When it gets to a certain length, it gets gingery. Like I really get. I mean, ancestrally, I'm half English, half Irish. So there's a good ginger gene in there. So who would that be in the NHL? Who's got like a gingery beard?
Rafi Torres.
That's what I was thinking. That's the only one that came to mind. That was the only one. Maybe Joe Pavelski. Yeah. Torres was the one that came to mind for me. I don't get like the hair on the cheeks. I just get it sort of like that tight, you know, sort of chin strap. They ever tell you my big idea in high school? And I almost did this once as a goof. I was going to grow, my sideburns down all the way along the side of my face and then around underneath my face and up on the other side and then like cut my hair really short and then shave either Jofa or CCM on the side of my head. So it looked like I was wearing a hockey helmet all day long. I believe that's referred to as chick repellent, Greg Wyshynski. Chick repellent.
I
look cool, man.
Positive that is some chick repellent there. let's see here. This is from... My name is Reg.
Hey, Reg. Your coach. Reg.
This is me. So, hold on. Merrick, who's your Selke pick, by the way?
Bergeron.
Okay. Why Bergeron over Taves for the Selke is his question. For me, it's the faceoff percentage. He's that much better. If you look at his defensive zone starts, he is doing the heavy lifting defensively as far as faceoffs and coverage. And if you want to see it as a complete player award, I think he's got the offensive stats to match. I think Bergeron's the best defensive forward in hockey. I just do.
Yeah, I'm same way. That to me, like you pointed out earlier, that's the fancy stats trophy. That's the one where, as it's voted on now, that's where Gabe Desjardins, you really realize how much of a great resource this guy is and his Behind the Net website. Yeah. That's the fancy stats trophy.
This Going Postal question is from someone named Harrison Mooney, who writes in.
Hello, Harrison, if that is indeed your real name.
Harrison Mooney writes in, kill one puppy or kitten. You have to kill one. Merrick?
Kitten. Yeah.
Well, listen,
for sure.
As much as I want to put the versus in Merrick versus Wyszynski as often as I can, I would also kill a kitten because, frankly, there is a better chance that the kitten will grow up to be a giant asshole than the puppy.
I'm still convinced that kittens have like alien DNA in them. Because if you look at like
what
if you look at old pictures, like if you look at old pictures, you look at old pictures from like. Drawings of what aliens looked like, you know, even coming up to the cover of Communion, for crying out loud. Don't they look like cats? Don't their faces look like cats? I'm convinced,
man. Grays look like kitties?
I think cats are part alien. I think they're the grays amongst us. Hide out in the open. And what do you know about a cat? Cat'll always do teach you one thing. You can never know me. Mm-hmm. Cats will do things totally unpredictable. Dogs, not so much.
Yeah. When they eventually...
I think they're aliens, dude.
When they eventually evolve into laser cats, I believe you might be right. You might have something there. Stephen Foster writes in, what's the deal with CBC's general hatred for anything the Canadiens do? Healy, I don't think, has ever said anything positive about the Habs, ever. Even during Habs games, he manages to find a way to bring it back to the Leafs. So are Hockey Night in Canada employees told to have favorable opinions about Toronto due to the location of the CBC studios? Also, Hockey Night in Canada has blown the big one since Jeff has moved on to bigger and better things.
Oh, yeah. My 45 seconds, my 45-second hits on the iDesk, really, the CBC really misses those. Talk over scenic, throw it back to
blown Ron. The big one, sir.
Nah. You know what? I'll tell you. Hockey fans see and hear what they want to see and hear, by and large. And we used to get this with every single market when I was at Hockey Night in Canada. I'd hear it on Twitter every time I was on TV. You know, I remember there was one game, it was a playoff game, I think it was the game one of St. Louis and Vancouver, and CBC couldn't get an HD, no, it was a game three, couldn't get an HD truck for whatever reason, right? So the game was going to be broadcast in HD, it was going to be in standard def. And all of a sudden, it's a big conspiracy about how the CBC hates Vancouver, and if it were in Toronto, this would never be an issue, it'll always be in HD. You always hear the stuff about Montreal. You know, I hear stuff about Montreal going back to 1955 and the Richard riots, but you always hear stuff from every single market. Ottawa feels like, you know, the younger brother who doesn't get the attention in Ontario. Alberta's always got a beef with CBC for their game selection. You hear it from every single market except Toronto. Toronto is the super served market from Hockey Night in Canada. And you know why? It's pretty easy. You know how many people watched that game 7 between the Boston Bruins and Toronto Maple Leafs? Wish? Did you see the numbers from CBC?
How many people?
Over 5 million people.
That's like a million people that are in Canada. That's crazy.
We got 30 million, yo, calm. We don't have the 300 million that you guys have. We like to have a little bit of space. We like to move around a little bit. When I was at Hockey Night, I always heard it, and I suspect it's the exact same thing now. You can read into, and people are still telling me that Jim, that Huey's a homer for the Vancouver Canucks. I don't hear that a bit.
Yeah.
And then people turn around and say that Huey's a homer for the Toronto Maple Leafs. I don't get that a second. I really don't. But if you hear them say one thing positive about one team, you think, oh, that's it. They're showing a homer for that team. People hear what they want to hear. There's no swaying them.
This is from Stafford Heppenstall from Redlands, California. Merrick, I'm going to make vegan enchiladas this weekend. What vegan cheese melts the best?
Daiya.
That's exactly
D-A-I-Y-A.
What he guessed.
D-A-I-Y-A. Yeah, D-A-I-Y. Yeah. It's the only one that I can kind of... I've had some bad ones. Oh, God. D-A-I-Y-A. Diet cheese. Oh, it's awful, dude. I'll be upfront and blunt about it. Vegan cheese sucks. It's awful. That's
yes!
The only one. That's the only one that I've ever come close to enjoying.
Vegan cheese.
Take that, vegan cheese.
Yeah.
So I just stay away from it. But that's the one.
Hey, I made a really good meal. I got it. I'm on Instagram. You can find me on Wyszynski is the name on Instagram. I made fried shrimp tacos last night with grilled corn and frizzy lettuce and a Thai sriracha mayo.
Really?
Oh, so first time I ever deep fried something. I don't have a deep fryer. I used a pasta pot, but it worked out really nicely.
When I ate meat, there was one time I was at my buddy's house, and we deep fried a turducken.
Nice.
Yeah, holy. And it was in the middle of winter, too. God, we were hammered. And let's deep fry a turducken.
So God, we were hammered. What better thing to do than to take a vat of boiling oil that could catch on fire?
That's right. Right in the backyard while we're all on my buddy's patio, too. And, like, the wives are inside going, oh, you idiots. Stupid. Right. And we're all standing out there shivering. Like, it's like the coldest day of the year. We thought it'd be a great idea to make a turducken. Hey, let's deep fry a turducken, dude.
All right, last question today. Alex Loop, we close as we often do. We bring it all back to hockey.
All right.
With the current playoff format, I'm assuming. I guess Alex is asking if what our dream Stanley Cup final would be, like, overall. But let's put it to this year. Like, right now, final eight teams. What's your dream final right now with these eight teams that we have left?
Chicago, Los Angeles.
No, I think it's cup final, dude.
Yeah, cup final. Is it dream? Like, it doesn't matter regardless of the conference?
Oh, okay, let's do it that way. Yeah, sure.
I thought you meant totally jump ball.
Let's do both. Let's do jump ball in the current format. Jump ball, Chicago, Los Angeles.
Chicago, Los Angeles, and traditional, it's got to be Pittsburgh. Pittsburgh and, either L.A. or Chicago. And I'll go Chicago. Caves and Crosby.
Dream final for me would be jump ball one would be Chicago, San Jose. Niemi versus Chicago. San Jose trying to win their cup. And Chicago being the best team in the league this year. Traditional format. Now that Washington's out, I mean, it would have been Washington, San Jose just because someone would have to win. And that would have been fantastic. The monkey off your back series. With them gone, I know Pittsburgh, Chicago is the sexiest matchup left. But, dude, to see the internet explode if it's Boston and San Jose would be wonderful.
Joe Thornton, I know. Would you not love to see it go to Game 7 in Boston, Joe Thornton scores the overtime winner?
Oh, you think the Kessel stuff is interesting? Joe Thornton back in Boston and a couple... Hey, you know what's interesting about that, dude? I was thinking about the other day, like, how awesome that would be to have Thornton versus the Bruins. But think about this, man. How many fans have come to this game since the Thornton trade? Like, is that as... It's a huge deal for me. It's a huge deal for you. It's a huge deal for, I'd say, 80% of hockey fans. But that 20% that just came to the game, did they give a shit about that trade?
That is a really good question. Because it happened early after the lockout was over, right?
And there's no question that growth, especially here in the States, has been exponential since that lockout. I wonder if a lot of fans don't even have any frame of reference for what that moment meant for those two franchises.
And you know what that's like? I can liken that to, because I live obviously in the Toronto market. If you talk to anyone over 40, they'll tell you the Maple Leafs' main rival is the Montreal Canadiens. But if you talk to anyone under 40, you know what they'll tell you? Ottawa.
Boston. Who?
Ottawa Senators. Ottawa Senators.
That's
say that's the main rival. That is a really good point about you. You're right. I just assumed that, oh man, the internet would go berserk on that, but maybe not. Maybe they weren't there for the acrimony between Jeremy Jacobs and Joe Thornton, the owner calling out the player for being soft.
Yeah, you bring up that rivalry thing. I wonder if there's the same point of demarcation for a Flyers fan who, if they're somewhat new to the Flyers in the last decade, they'd say the Penguins, but the old team
Penguins, the big rivals.
Rangers.
Yeah, that's a good point.
Interesting.
That's a good thinking. Oh, well, you know, as I was watching that game 7, like 5 million other Canadians, apparently, according to CBC research, and the Leafs are up 4-1. And, you know, I turned to Mayday and I said, you know what this is, Mayday? This is lockout karma for Jeremy Jacobs. Didn't you get that feeling? This is lockout karma for how Jeremy Jacobs behaved during the lockout. Yeah. And then after, when he lied about, you know, what offer was on the table when the players rejected it. Well, it was the exact same offer they ended up taking months later. It was on the table before the lockout. That was a load of bull crap.
That's why I hope.
This is karma for Jeremy Jacobs.
I hope when Boston gets eliminated, it is by somebody who is strong in the PA. Like, I don't know who's left on the table that was strong in the PA. If Craig Adams,
would be awesome.
If like Craig Adams scored the game winner.
If Winnipeg made the playoffs and Ron Hainsey scored the goal. Assisted from Chris Campoli, who signed as a free agent before the deadline. That would have been the best right there.
All right. Lexi Hates Poetry, our good friend, writes in, Wyszynski, yeah. Who's the Brooklyn hipster now that you're taking pictures of your food on Instagram? Now, I am merely moving my art to a new gallery, ma'am.
Your art.
I've been taking pictures of my food and beer on Twitter for ages, but this Instagram business, you could be the shittiest photographer in the world and your stuff looks good.
That's me.
Exactly.
Maybe I should get on Instagram. What do I take, Matt?
From Matt. Matt Krawczyk from Boston writes in: Sharks Bruins in the Cup final, and oh my God, that's Jonathan Chichu's music.
Oh my God, that's Marco Sturm's music.
but the hey, Sturm and Chichu walk out. They're playing the NWO theme.
Quick about Lexi. Can you do Lexi a favor? I did this for the last couple of days.
I don't know. Can I straighten his tie?
Hold on there, cowboy. You just put it back in its holster, son. Not talking about that kind of favor. Take a picture of the chair you're sitting in right now and send it to her. Because she's part of that art exhibit of chairs.
Oh, okay.
So I sent her a picture of the chair I do the podcast in and the chair that I sit in for Hockey Central.
I took a picture of a chair yesterday. I took a picture of the chair I did the Redskins. Capitals radio show in. It had a Redskins logo etched in the back, which I thought was kind of
do it, man. Send that to her too. Then just take pictures of chairs. Send it to Lexi. Everybody, Lexi Hates Poetry on Twitter. Send this woman pictures of chairs. Everybody. Take a picture of the chair you're sitting in right now.
Thanks to Tracy Myers for joining us. Thanks to everybody who checked in for going postal. Thanks to Jeff Merrick. Selke Trophy for giving us three better MVP candidates than the Hart Trophy did. And we'll be back tomorrow. Enjoy the Hawks and Wings. I will have to catch it on the rebound because tonight, sir... How many Star Trek movies am I going to watch? One? No.
Really?
Two? Double feature
really?
In Columbia, Maryland. J.J. Abrams' first Star Trek film, followed by the sequel, Star Trek Into Darkness, that I'm sure I'm going to hate based on the reviews so far. But nonetheless, upwards of like 4 hours of Trek adventures, 4 hours with Chris Pine and his dreamy eyes.
I have a request for you tonight. You know
Please.
What guy I want you to be tonight? I want you to be the guy that complains to people on the internet who post the score of the game because you have it recorded at home. Can you be that guy?
Sure.
Just scream. Just pick a couple of people and randomly yell at them for having the audacity to report live event because you have it on your PVR at home and you're wanting to watch later.
Spoiler. Excuse me. Some of us haven't watched the game yet.
Oh, some of us have a PVR. We're going to watch it later when we get home.
I was doing everything I could to avoid the score. By that, I mean I was on Twitter. Idiots.
I didn't want to find out what was happening, so I hung out on Twitter all night.
Yeah, right.
I wanted to detach myself from the world, so I hung out on Twitter.
So I was trying to avoid the score the best way I could by staring at the crawl on the bottom of TSN's...
yeah, exactly.
It's just like, whatever. All right, everybody. Yeah. Thanks for joining us, and we will see you on the morrow. Bye.
Bye.